Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Robert Wright of Horvitz & Levy for defendants and appellants, the Binifards.
Okay.
This case involves the tort of bad faith waste. The tort is an exception to the non-recourse liability that ordinarily protects mortgagors in the event of a default.
And the fundamental statutory exemption.
The exception for bad faith waste was actually recognized by the California Supreme Court.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor, in the matter of Cornelison versus Kornbluth. And
speak up.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm sorry. And the fundamental issue in this case is whether this exception to non-recourse liability should be confined to its traditional parameters, or, as Dan Joint Venture apparently contends, as the appellee contends, expanded to impose greater liability on all mortgagors. And the tort in this case was expanded beyond its traditional parameters in three ways. First, liability was imposed despite a general release. And here, the Binifards obtained a note secured by a deed of trust on the Jewelry Center, which is a 12-story building constructed in the 1920s with a mixture of manufacturing.
I've been there. You know, it's right downtown, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right.
It's right downtown. And
we've all been there.
Right. At one moment or another.
Yes, Your Honor. And
well, that's before my time.
When the note was in arrears, the Cato Company, which is Dan Joint Venture's servicing agent, purchased the note at a discount, then assigned that note to Dan Joint Venture. Dan Joint Venture then foreclosed on the Jewelry Center and sued the Binifards for bad faith waste. But the note and deed of trust release that bad faith waste claim. They do
so. Did you raise this issue in the district court?
Yes, Your Honor. This issue
when?
Raised in the district court.
And where is there a ruling by the district court?
And the issue was raised in the district court in a summary judgment motion before the first appeal. The district court granted that summary judgment motion on other grounds mm-hmm. and did not address the issue of the release.
So when you went back, we reversed that grant of summary judgment, so there was a tribal issue of fact. And when you got back there, didn't you raise it again with the district court?
No, Your Honor. The
Why
issue
not?
Is the record doesn't fully reflect that. The issue was raised in the summary judgment.
No. That's not my question. I understand that.
My
question went back. Did you raise it? And if not, why not?
The issue was not raised after this court reversed the initial grant of summary judgment.
So then why should we deal with this issue on appeal? As I recall the events here, when you got back, there was a little more work on the case, I guess, for discovery and complete all the work and all the trial preparation. The court held a pretrial conference order. And, you know, the process in the district court for a pretrial conference order is you get to list the issues that need to be tried. Defenses, whatever it might be. No, and the judges, we're all district court trial judges. And, you know, tell me what we're going to try.
Yes, Your Honor. And
what is it? And I looked carefully over the pretrial conference order and I didn't see this issue in there. Goes to trial on the facts, you know, having lengthy trial, a pretty complex trial. Then there's motions for judgment notwithstanding the verdict on various grounds. So motions for a new trial. This isn't raised at either point.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the central part of your brief on appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. It is.
So why should we reach it? I mean, the district court might have liked to have ruled on this. Maybe it would have been formed our approach to it?
If this court finds that the presentation of the issue in the district court was not sufficient to preserve it for appeal, this court still has the discretion to consider the issue. It is an issue of law. It is based on undisputed facts. The note and deed of trust on which this issue is based are in the evidence. The issue was briefed in the district court, and the district court did not rule on the issue, but it was briefed in the district court. The issue has been briefed here. And finally, this is an important issue that affects public policy because...
And why didn't you raise it in the trial court if it was so important? Why didn't you, ask the trial court at some point, any time, Motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict. You know, a motion for judgment as a matter of law after the verdict is in. Judge, guess what? This is all barred.
Because I was not counsel in the trial court, Your Honor, I would be speculating. I do know the issue was raised before the first appeal. I do know the district court granted that motion in which it was raised on other grounds. But I don't want to speculate about what's not in the record.
All right. Why don't you go on?
Yes, Your Honor. I can.
Can I ask you just a simple question?
Yes.
How much money did the Benefords end up with in their pocket on this deal?
There's not a simple answer to that question.
They got $8 million or some odd dollars, right? And then they put another mortgage on the property, another trustee, that's another 4.1. And then they kept the rents for a long time, right? Then you got the rent, right?
Yes, Your Honor, there was rent.
So what's all that add up to?
Well, Your Honor, there was evidence that the Benefards invested between $4.7 and $5.2 million in the jewelry center and withdrew a total of $9.9 million. Yeah. Now, this withdrawal includes the amount of the second deed of trust,
yeah,
which was approximately $4 million of that amount.
They lost that.
And yes, Your Honor.
So then what did they end up with, $5
million? Well, Your Honor, including that second note of deed of trust,
yeah,
there was evidence that the Benefards withdrew $5.2 million from this property, if you include that second deed of trust. The Benefards then invested approximately $6 million in another building, and they did so while the real estate market was still strong.
Yeah.
When the real estate market collapsed, they lost that investment in the other building.
Yeah.
So of the $5.2 million that you could say they withdrew from this jewelry center investment, they lost $6 million in this other building that they purchased. And that evidence goes to the issue of the defense of economic necessity. However, the trial court excluded the evidence that they lost the $6 million investment in this other building, although the Benefards offered that evidence for the purpose of showing they lacked the financial resources to continue maintaining the jewelry center once they lost this other investment.
Yeah, but they were getting rent out of it all the time. How much were they getting every month? $70,000? What's the figure?
I don't have the precise figure before me, Your Honor.
They were getting a lot of money.
The amount of rent did vary during the period. And an established defense to bad faith waste is the inability to make ends meet financially. And prior to the first appeal,
don't you have to look at the building itself? You got the money coming out of the building. I mean, let's say you took the money and you went to Las Vegas. God, I hate to use that example. You went down to the Indian casino, huh? And you lost the money. Is that a defense?
Well, Your Honor, that would ultimately be a question for the jury to decide, and the jury was not allowed to consider the totality of that defense because it was not given the evidence that the Benefards lost the $6 million investment in another building.
Let's get back to the issue of whether or not, you know, the non-recourse provision in the note applies to the statutory claim of waste, right? Is that sort of the heart of your appeal?
That is the first issue in the brief, Your Honor, and yes. Allow me to address that, please. The note in deed of trust released the bad faith waste claim. They do so because the note in deed of trust provide that they release any claim, any damages claim, based on the provisions and the agreements in the deed of trust. And one of those agreements in the deed of trust was that the Benefards would maintain the jewelry center in good repair. And that is the basis of Dan's bad faith waste claim.
It goes further than that, though, doesn't it?
The bad faith waste claim goes further than that, but an essential element of the bad faith waste claim is that the Benefards allegedly failed to maintain the jewelry center in good repair.
But your contention is that clause, the clause in the note in the deed of trust, that it constitutes a waiver of their right to bring a suit for bad faith waste.
Yes, Your Honor.
Intentional, knowing, you know, there's an element of intent that's involved.
Yes, Your Honor. And Dan argues
that they just didn't simply have a claim for failure to maintain the property.
Their claim was for bad faith waste, right. Your Honor. That's correct.
Isn't that different?
It has the additional element of bad faith, and so in that sense it is different.
But why does the clause, what is it about the language of the clause? What is it, 44? In the deed of trust or wherever it is?
Yes, sir. It's both in the deed of trust and in the note. In the note, it's at clause 14.
Yeah, 14, I'm sorry.
Which is at page 27.
So of the, which is the language in here that you contend constitutes a waiver of their right to maintain?
Yes, Your Honor.
Claim for bad faith waste.
The language is that the payee shall look solely to the property, the leases, and any other collateral now or hereafter constituting security for this note, for the payment of this note, or for the performance of any of the agreements, I'll omit language, in the deed of trust, and then skipping down about four lines, nor shall any deficiency judgment be sought, obtained, or enforced for the satisfaction of the remedies of the payee, and I'll skip a little bit, or for the performance of any of the agreements, obligations, covenants, or warranties contained herein or therein, which refers to the deed of trust. And then looking at the deed of trust at page, at clause 8 in the deed of trust, which is at page 36 of the excerpts of record, that provides that trustor.
I'm sorry, page what?
At page 36.
Okay, go ahead.
In clause 8 at the top, it provides trustor shall cause the property to be maintained in a good and safe condition and repair. And further down, it provides that the trustor shall promptly repair, replace, or rebuild any part of the property which may be destroyed by any casualty or become damaged, worn, or dilapidated.
Okay.
And Dan's essential.
So that should be read broad. That should those clauses that you just that text.
Yes, Your Honor.
We should interpret to mean that constitutes a waiver.
How about?
Yes, Your Honor.
How about paragraphs 19B and 19B5? The first deed of trust.
Paragraph 19B, Your Honor.
Yeah, it says, Dan shall have the right to exercise any and all rights and remedies available at law and in equity, including without limitation, the following. Exercise all other rights and remedies provided herein in the note or any other security documents or provided by law. And then you go down and you look at, and there's a paragraph 25. It says, no remedy herein conferred upon or reserved to Dan is intended to be exclusive of any other remedy contained herein or by law provided or permitted, but each shall be cumulative and shall be in addition to every other remedy given hereunder or now or hereafter existing at law or in equity or by statute. And then you've got the statute, huh? And what does the statute say?
Well, the statute ordinarily provides for non-recourse provisions. The exception to that statute is recognized by case law.
What does the statute say about waste?
I believe the primary statutory authority is are sections 580B and 580D of the Code of Civil Procedure, which the California Supreme Court in the Cornelison versus Kornbluth decision construed. And further, the Court construed section 2929 of the Civil Code, providing, quote, waste, no person whose interest is subject to the lien of a mortgage may do any act which will substantially impair the mortgagee's security. And then the California Supreme Court in Cornelison had to reconcile that provision with the language of sections 580B and 580D of the Code of Civil Procedure.
So, and how did they reconcile that?
They reconciled that, Your Honor, to find that a non-recourse note ordinarily does not bar a claim for bad faith waste.
Do they use the words non-recourse in Corneliuson?
I believe they do, Your Honor. Let me find.
Because, you know, Corneliuson held that California had a deficiency judgment. Statutes bar recovery for waste against a trustor following a non-judicial foreclosure sale when the waste actually results from the depressed condition of the general real estate market, but not when the waste is caused by the bad faith acts of the trustor debtor. That's what you had here.
Yes, Your Honor, and in
bad faith waste, and that's what the jury found.
In the decision in Re Mills, Your Honor.
But isn't that what the jury found?
The jury found bad faith waste.
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And in the decision in Re Mills, and this goes back to the issue of the defense of economic necessity, the Ninth Circuit clearly held that a defense to bad faith waste is the inability to make ends meet financially. And consequently, the Benifards sought to present evidence that they were unable to maintain the jewelry center because they lost their $6 million investment in another property. This was evidence that was so important because it was critical to this defense of economic necessity that this Ninth Circuit recognized in Inree Mills. Because evidence that the Benifards lost the $6 million investment in another property would have supported their argument that they were unable to maintain the jewelry center because they lacked sufficient funds to do so.
They got about $1.8 million in rents, right? Is that right? They got the rents. They kept the rents. They didn't make any payments.
I believe that number's in the...
They had money to maintain the property, but they used it for other ventures.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, they did. They did obtain rents from the jewelry center. They did use those for this other venture. And the question is the jury going to be allowed to determine whether there was bad faith in this case if the Benifards can present evidence that they reasonably thought that they could maintain both investments, but then but they failed to anticipate that the real estate market was going to collapse, that the rents were going to come down, and that they failed to anticipate these economic conditions. At the time that they...
While this was going on, they were milking the property. They were taking the rents and not making the payments and having a jolly time with somebody else's money, huh?
While,
good faith, is it?
While this was going on, the Benifards were receiving rents, but they had also invested the $6 million in another building and were losing that money. So the question is whether the jury can consider both sides of the story.
The rents, but they weren't maintaining the building.
And
they weren't making the payments on the note, right? Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. You are correct that they were not making the payments on the note.
They were just taking the money.
And Dan Joint Venture's argument to the jury was that the Benifards failed to make approximately $4 million in necessary repairs in this building.
And jury, so... What was the jury award?
The jury award was approximately $2.8 million.
Okay.
And Dan argued that the Benifards clearly had the resources to make these repairs because they withdrew approximately $10 million from this building.
Okay.
But in fact, if the jury had been allowed to consider that $6 million was lost on another investment and that the total withdrawal was actually not the $9.9 million because that fails to take into account the initial investment that Benifards made in the building, but was actually $5.2 million, then the jury could have considered in the whole scheme of things whether there was bad faith shown, because that is the element here. It's not just waste, but bad faith. Whether bad faith was shown under these circumstances with the Benifards who lost $6 million. And if I may address on the issue of the release, I'm sorry.
You've only got 33 seconds.
Yes, Your Honor. If I may address on the initial issue of the release, Dan's argument is that this release only extends to contract claims and not to tort claims or statutory claims. But the release in the note contains an express exception for fraud, for misrepresentation, and breach of trust. These are tort claims.
This was the issue that wasn't raised when the case was sent back.
This is the issue that was not raised when the case was sent back, and it is an issue that this Court can consider for the first time on appeal. And there will be no
jury trial, by the way.
It was between 1 and 2 weeks. I forget now. And there would be no reason for this express exception for these torts and these provisions codified in statutes such as fraud if, in fact, the release did not extend to other torts such as bad faith waste, for which there was no express exception. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Gary Barr. I represent the appellee, Dan Joint Venture. I will address the issues that were raised by the Court specifically. Obviously, the appellees agree that the and contend that the issue of what the appellants call the release language, which is really a non-recourse provision, was waived by the failure to include it in the pretrial conference order or giving the lower court, the district court, any opportunity to decide that issue. It's not in any of the pleadings. There's nothing in the record that would indicate that.
Why doesn't it fit within the exception that, you know, we can consider it because, one, you know, it's a question of law, really, and number two, there are no disputed issues of fact needed to be resolved to reach that issue?
Well, I do believe, Your Honor, that it's...
Three, it's in the interest of justice.
Your Honor, I believe that it is not strictly an issue of law, and there are a couple of reasons for that. Whenever you're going to look at this contract, as we heard, there are some exceptions like fraud, breach of trust, which are included in the exception to the non-recourse provision. So then we would have to look at the intent of the parties when this contract was first entered into. For example, as raised in the reply brief, there's the choice of law issue, which hasn't been argued today, which there's a bold statement that it's mechanistic that you would decide that a choice of law, when in fact the Nedloyd case, which was cited in the reply brief, sets down specific factual analysis that needs to be determined before you can determine whether or not which choice of law should, whether the choice of law provision should govern. Similarly, with regard to the issue of...
Isn't the simple answer to that, since it wasn't raised, we automatically apply the law of the forum?
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, even the appellants throughout the district court case only argued California law. And so my point of the was more of a by way of an example. Similarly, with the non-recourse provision, which is very complex, as Judge Pragerson pointed to other provisions in the deed of trust, which seem to allow statutory claims. Bad faith waste is a statutory claim. It's under 2029 of the Civil Code. All Corneliuson, the Supreme Court did in Corneliuson, is reconcile 2029 with the anti-deficiency statute to add this burden of bad faith. So therefore, it really is a factual, or at least partly a factual determination, which therefore should have been decided from in the district court, and this court is appellee's contention that this court should decline hearing it and deciding it in this case. If the court wishes to hear it, because there was some questioning about that, the language of the agreements themselves are very telling, in that the provisions that are in the note in the deed of trust, the non-recourse provisions, talk about obligations of this agreement and the commensurate agreement. So the note refers to the deed of trust, and the deed of trust refers to the note. It does not refer to other claims. And the Supreme Court, again, in Corneliuson, has obviously found this overriding policy of mortgagors should not, or trustors should not, be allowed to despoil the property in bad faith. This was confirmed both in the Nippon case, which we have cited, in which there was a non-recourse provision, and the Court of Appeal, California Court of Appeal, indicated that there's still a claim for bad faith waste. In the Jaffe-Spindler case, the same thing. And as for the Mills case, the Mills case is very unique on its facts. The Mills case, the owners of the property had only held the property for a few months. That's very different than the situation, and this court actually found that to be a significant factor. In this case, the owners of the property had held it for over 8 years, and as a result, had all this time, and in fact, in our brief is a chart on page, I believe it's 24. I'll give the court the exact page number. I tabbed it. Yes, page 24, which is cited to the record. Year by year, the evidence that was presented at trial with regard to the money that was taken out each year, which did total slightly over $9.9 million in the period between 1986 and 1994. Therefore, this case is much more akin to Nippon and the Jaffe case, where there was long-term holding. With regard to the evidence regarding the loss of the other building, this case is about what happened at this building, the Jewelry Center building. The appellants took out the $9.9 million. The jury found that that was in bad faith. The evidence was overwhelming that the building had deteriorated, and the jury found that, in fact, it had deteriorated, and there was the money there to have fixed the building or maintained the building, but instead they took it out. What they did with the money aside from what they did with the building is really irrelevant, which is what the court found. If there are no further questions, I will submit. Thank you very much.
Do you want to say anything? Give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to correct one thing. I did say that I thought that the Cornelison versus Kornbluth case did use the term non-recourse. I believe it's simply later authorities have come to describe that concept as non-recourse, but that term I did not see in the Cornelison case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, and the matter will stand submitted, and this court will recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise. This court for this session stands adjourned.